Well, hey, everybody. Welcome back to Master the NEC, where we talk about the National Electrical Code and all things electrically related. My name is Paul Abernathy, your host, and we're continuing our journey into Article 625. That's Electric Vehicle Power Transfer Systems. EV vehicles, right? Everybody knows these EV vehicles. They're all over the place. Teslas and everywhere. The Leafs from, I guess that's Nissan, right? So you have all these, and of course we have these PEVs, which is hybrid vehicles that have both fossil fuel as well as, you know, gas, as well as electric. So, I mean, you have all these options, but we're talking about EV vehicles today and power transfer systems. And hopefully you've listened to part one, which is our basic introduction, where we went over some definitions that were very unique to 625. And, of course, we talked about the voltages, which, to be honest with you, is pretty much the same voltages we'd use in the NEC anyway. And, again, we talked about all of them have to be listed as well. So all of the EVSE, which is the, again, if you remember in our first episode, EVSE is the electric vehicle supply equipment. And, of course, we have EVPEE, which we just call EVPE, which is, again, the ability to have the electric power equipment, but also the export equipment that can kind of bring it back from the EV vehicle into the premise wiring system, okay? All this kind of things. And, of course, we have rules about all that transfer of power again. So, anyway, we covered part one, pretty detailed definitions. Some of them will probably be pretty darn new to you. So, again, make sure you go back and listen to that first podcast before you even move into this one. So we're in part two right now. Now, part two is dealing with equipment construction. Now, inherently, this should already be taken care of by the manufacturer, right? That's the concept of making sure that the manufacturer is putting out products that meets all the specific standards and everything like that. So again, so when we're looking at part two, we're just looking at equipment construction. And so this is going to be a pretty short podcast. Again, I've had a lot of requests for people to say, you know, keep the podcast short. And you can listen to them at your leisure. But again, we're going to talk about part two of Article 625. And the part two is entitled Equipment Construction. So the very first one we're going to look at is, and I will notice that there is a lot of space between 625.5, which is the listing requirement in part one, and now you're in part two, and it jumps all the way to 625.17. So trust me, we got plenty of room in there to grow, if you will, under part one. Okay? So, and I'm sure it will as this industry grows even more. Again, as you probably heard in part one, I am not sure I am totally sold on 100% EV vehicles. But again, they're here, and we have Tesla, we have, gosh, I can't remember the other names, but obviously Nissan Leaf has something, and I think that even Ford is coming out with a Mustang that's totally EV, and I mean, there's other ones out there, and then, of course, there's PHEVs, which are, again, like a hybrid, has both fossil fuel and uses electric, so, I mean, there's a lot of options out there in the market, okay, so anyway, let's go on and look at some of the equipment construction requirements. So 625.17, and also I should mention, we're in the 2020 edition of the National Electrical Code, okay? For those that are following along. All right, so the first one is Section 17 is cords and cables. So 625.17A, power supply cords. So this is typically connecting the equipment from actually EVSE equipment over to the connector or probably the power cord from a receptacle attachment plug on the end, if that's the case, coming over to the EV unit or the EVP, God, I can't even get the acronyms right. The EVSE equipment. Wow, there's just so many acronyms to try to remember. So here's what it says. Cords and cables, 625.17. We have an A, we have a B, we have a C, and we have a D, all under this section 17. So the first one is supply power cord. So what does it say? It says the cord, the cable for cord connected equipment shall comply with all of the following. Okay. Shall comply with all of the following. All right. So what do we got? We've got one, two, three, and three's got an A and a B. So what's number one say? All right. So again, we're talking about the power supply cord. It says, be any of the types specified in 625.17b1, we haven't seen that yet, or is an important statement here, or meaning, okay, so it's one of those listed in 625.17b1, or hard service cords, like an SO, those type of things, hard service cords. But it also says junior hard service cords or portable power cable types in accordance with table 400.4. And of course, you'd have to look at 400.4 because 400.4 is going to list different types that fall under that category of whether or not they're considered portable power cables or junior hard service cords or hard service cords. And of course, if you go to table 400.4, it's pretty easy to determine that because at that table, you'll be able to see it. And actually, if you go all the way to the right, you'll be able to see what it's rating, whether it's, and then all the way to the left, you'll have the ratings for like hard service cords, SE, SEOs, SEWs, and you have junior hard service cords, SJ, and a bunch of different acronyms, different types for different applications, wet locations and whatnot. So again, if you're going to be doing that and you had those hard service cords, then you could do hard junior hard, you can do hard service cord, or portable power cable types that are listed in table 400.4, okay? And then, of course, it says also, you know, they all, you know, had to be listed, and as applicable, for exposure to oil in damp and wet locations accordingly. So pick your hard usage cord, your junior hard use service cord, or your power cable type, portable power cable cords, pick them accordingly because they have to be adequate for the environment to which they're exposed, okay? So I can go with the ones that are listed in 625.17b1, which we haven't even looked at yet, or I can use a hard service cord, junior hard service cord, or portable power cable types as listed in table 400.4, follow the rules, and again, be aware of any exposure to whether or not to be to oil, damp, or wet location, and that'll be listed in that table as well. So it takes all confusion out of that, all right? Now, number two, it says, again, you have to meet with all the following. And number two says, have an ampacity as specified in table 400.5A1 or for 8AWG and larger in the 60-degree C column of table 400.5A2. So when it comes to ampacity and conductors and whatnot, and you're going to, and of course, as we move into other parts of the code, for example, when we'll start getting into conductor sizing and everything to kind of understand what that all means when you're picking a ratings and branch circuits, that's going to be in part three is the installation. We haven't gotten there yet. But what we're doing is it's just telling us right up front, okay, you're going to use any type of cord here for this power supply cord, and you're going to use one in one of the types we mentioned earlier. Ampacity-wise, you're going to use table 400.5A1, or if it's 8-gauge and larger, then you can use the 60-degree C column of table 400.5A2. So that's pretty straightforward. Basically, you've got anything that looks like 10 and smaller that you're going to use table 400.5A1, and anything that's 8 and larger, then you'll just use a 60-degree column of table 400.5A2. There you go. There's an or in there, so this or that, okay? So follow the table 400.5A1, or when it's 8-gauge and larger, you got the option to go with the 60-degree column under table 400.5A2. You got choices, okay? We always like choices. Number three says have an overall length as specified in either of the following. So we have an A and a B here. Okay, so these are all the requirements for this power cord. So what is it say for A? A says, when the interruptive device of the personal protective system specified in 625.22, which we haven't looked at yet. So this is, we looked at the definitions when we did part one podcast. And we're assuming this is a personal protective system that's built into the system to prevent against shock. Okay, so it's stating where the interruptive device of that personal protective system specified in 625.22 is located within the enclosure of the power of the supply equipment or charging power supply cord, I guess it could be built into the cord, shall be not more than the length indicated in I or II. So we have an I or II, okay, underneath it. And so, okay, so what does it say here? The first one says, for portable equipment in accordance with 625.44A, the power supply cord shall be not more than 12 inches long. All right, so the power cord shall not be more than 12 inches long. Okay, that's a shorty, okay, for portable equipment. And obviously 625.44A is going to give us, you know, some statements, and I would assume that is dealing with portable equipment, and we'll look at that obviously when we get there. And of course, I think 44B is dealing with fastened in place equipment. So you have some that are portable equipment and some that are fastened in place. So kind of just touching on that, we'll go there at a later date. Now, it clearly says for portable equipment. So it's wanting that protection device and that cord to be limited in length. Now, when it comes to item, I guess it would be II, it says for a subdivision II, for stationary equipment in accordance with 625.44B, again, that was stationary equipment, it says the power supply cord shall be not more than 6 feet long, and the equipment shall be installed at a height that prevents the power supply cord from contacting the floor when it is connected to the proper receptacle. Okay, so cord, power cord plugged into the proper receptacle. It has got to be high enough that prevents that cord from contacting the floor. Okay, so if it's stationary equipment, you got that rule. It's going to limit that length to 6 feet, and it's got to be installed in a way that it's not in contact with the floor. Or if it's portable equipment, then the power cord shall not be more than 12 inches long. Okay, so 625.44A will deal with portable equipment, and 625.44B will deal with stationary equipment. And of course, we'll get to that as we get to that. How about that? All right, so now it says with either the following, and so now we have a B. And B says, when the interrupted device of the personal protective system specified in 625.22 is located in the attachment plug itself or within the first 12 inches of the power supply cord, then the overall cord length shall not be greater than 15 feet. Ah, so this is kind of allowing it to be integrated in the power cord, whether it's at the end of the attachment plug, which is what's going to plug into a receptacle, or it's integrated into the cord in kind of in series into the cord. And that means that it has to be within the first 12 inches of that power cord, okay? And if that's the case, once you get past that protective personnel protective system, then the overall length of the cord itself is not greater than 15 feet, okay? So we have some power cord that's going to supply the EVSC equipment. We have some power supply cord limitations here that we have to follow, okay? So we know where to get the ampacity for it. We haven't done any calculations for anything yet. That's in part three, but just hold tight. We know that we're going to choose ampacity from what table? We got table 400.5A1, yeah, because that is for cords and cables. And we've got a flexible cable. And we have, again, all these rules that tell us the type of cord we can use. Perfect. We got this down. Now, of course, you buy the equipment. This is probably already going to be already taken care of, right? But it's all great to know. Great to know. You got to know. And again, if you're on an exam, this is stuff that they'll ask you. Even though this really is out of the realm of what we would do as the electrician, all this equipment has to be listed anyway. But again, it's great to know. All right, so then we go on. So we've got all that squared away. We're going to go down now to 625.17B. This is the output cable to the electric vehicle. So this is going from the EVSE to the actual vehicle. Okay, now we have a one and a two. It shall be one of the following, either or. Now, you remember earlier where we said that they could be the types, the power supply cords could also be one of the types that are listed in 625.17B1. So don't forget that. Now we're looking at 625.17B And just remember, it could be this type for the power supply cord as well, but that's not what we're talking about right now. Right now, we're talking about the output cable to the actual electric vehicle. Number one, it said the type can be listed type is EV, EVJ, EVE, EVJE, EVT, or EVJT flexible cable as specified in table 400.4. So you've got construction requirements for the cable itself. You got all the information about it in that table 400.4, but those are the acronyms for those types of cable types that are okay from the EVSE over to the actual EV vehicle, okay? That's the output cable to the electric vehicle. Now, of course, we have a number, item two as well, and it says it shall be one of the following. So we have two, and what does this say? It says an integral part of listed electric vehicle supply equipment. So if I have a listed piece of equipment and it already comes with a cable on it, that goes from the EVSE over to the vehicle, it all comes as part of a listing, then it already will be evaluated. And that gives us an informational note that reminds us that there is a UL 2594. It says a standard for electrical vehicle supply equipment and UL 2202, which is the standard for electric vehicle EV charging system equipment. Okay, so it's going to cover the scope and probably going to be what covers that integral component that's with the EVSE and the cord with the connector on the end that goes to the EV vehicle. It's all going to be integral, and it's all going to be listed and evaluated that way. So we have options here, but you're probably going to get those with it already integral part of the equipment that you purchase because that equipment will be listed, okay? But I don't want to speak for the manufacturers. So again, you have options here, however you might run into that scenario. So next thing is 625.17. C, and that says the overall cord and cable length. All right, so when we're looking at this, and it says the overall usable length shall not exceed 25 feet unless equipped with a cable management system that is part of the listed electric vehicle supply equipment. Okay, so this overall cable length is not to be confused with the power supply cord. Okay. So in this case here, it's saying that that overall length is not to exceed 25 feet unless equipped with some type of cable management system that is part of the listed electric vehicle supply equipment, okay? So we don't really have a length limitation on the actual output cables or the overall cord aspect of it. We do have a length limitation for the power supply cord, okay? We clearly saw that before. But we do have an overall cord and cable length limitation here. So keep that in mind. There are two separate things in my mind because, again, there's a difference between an output cable and because we just learned what the output cable types are. And it's pretty much different than what I consider a power supply cord to the EVSE, okay? If it's a cord and plug or, those scenarios. All right, so the next thing is, when you're talking about the overall cord cable length, you have some subdivisions under that. You have 625.17C1, and you have 625.17C2. Now, C1, when we're talking about that overall cord and cable length, again, we have a hard and fast 25 foot on that, but we have what's called fastened in, portable equipment, and then we have what's called fastened in place. And of course, we read the definition of fastened in place and portable equipment seems to be pretty self-evident. So let's kind of read each one of these. Let's look at C1 first. Now, C1 says for portable EVSEs, it says the cord exposed usable length shall be measured from the face of the attachment plug to the face of the electric vehicle charger. So purely the cord length, not the connector and not the equipment length. Purely the cord from the point it leaves the output of the EVSE to the actual connector that connects to the EV vehicle. So that's for a portable one, that's your length measurement. And again, prior to that, we saw that it's not to be what? Not to exceed 25 feet. Unless equipped with a cable management system. Okay, so if it is and it has a cable management system, then okay, you can exceed 25 feet. If not, you're not to exceed 25 feet. Now let's look at the fastened in place. Now the fastened in place one is under 625.17C2. And it's titled Fastened in Place. It says where the electric vehicle supply equipment is fastened in place. Okay, so this would be probably what you would get with a Tesla charger system. It's mounted on the wall. It's securely fastened to the wall. It'll have a power supply cord coming in or it'll be hardwired. And then you'll have an output cord from the charging system over to the vehicle. Okay, so now we're dealing with the fastened in place aspect of an EVSE. It says, where the electric vehicle supply equipment, and I'm quite shocked that they didn't just use the acronym there because they're doing that everywhere else. It says, it's fastened in place. It says, the usable length of the output cable shall be measured from the cable exit of the electric vehicle supply equipment, that's the EVSE, to the face of the electric vehicle connector. So kind of the same thing. For both, whether it's portable or fastened in place, the measurement, it's to include only the cable, okay? That's it, just making it clear. And they give us a 25-foot length that is a maximum line, kind of, and you would say that that's a line in the sand, but it is not a line in the sand if the equipment has a cable management system on it. I don't think the portable ones will, but, you know, the high-tech fastened in place ones for Tesla, they might. They might have a system that does that. Who knows? All right, but anyway, for us, code-wise, we don't have a hard line in the sand because it does say 25 feet, but then it says, well, if it's equipped with a cable management system, then we'll let you, and that's the unless is kind of like an or in this scenario. All right, let's move on. So the next one we're going to look at is, again, we're talking construction and equipment construction, is the interconnecting cabling system. At 625.17D. So this is the last one under section 17. It says other cabling systems that are integral part of a listed EVSE, whatever they may be, and are intended to interconnect pieces of equipment within an EVSE system using approved installation methods shall be permitted. So you might have some interactive cabling. You might have monitoring systems. You might have something that comes that is other cable systems that are part of a listed EVSE system. All these manufacturers might make different extra components, things like that, that interconnect and all that. That's fine. And that's what 625.17D is talking about. But these other cabling systems, they're integral part of a listed EVSE, okay? And they're intended to interconnect pieces of equipment within an EVSE system, okay? So as long as it's associated with the EVSE system, and then you use the approved installation methods, which again, approved to be defined as per the acceptable AHJ, but I'm thinking most AHJs are going to say, you know, show me the installation manual from Tesla or whatnot, and I want to make sure you're following installation practices, because when you say improved installation methods, I mean, approved to who, right? AHJ. So as an AHJ, I'm not going to take that burden. So I'm going to probably say, show me an installation design from the manufacturer for how this piece of interconnected cabling system equipment is interconnecting with the EVSE that is listed. Show me how that's supposed to be done per the manufacturer's instructions. And ooh, there you go. That's fine. That's acceptable method. That's how I'm looking at it. So you can look at it however you want, but that's how I look at it. All right, 625.22, the last one in this part is we finally get to what's called personnel protection system. It says, the equipment shall have a listed system of protection against electric shock of personnel. So it's the equipment. So it has to be integrated in the equipment or in some way provide this protection. It says, where cord and plug connect equipment is used, the interrupting device of a listed personal protection system shall be provided according to 625.17A. And we just read that before. And again, it kind of tells you where that device has to be. It says a personnel protection system shall not be required for supplies less than 60 volts DC. Okay, so if it's less than 60 volts DC, then I don't have to have a personal protection system. It's not going to be required. It's not prohibited. It's just not required. Okay. And so there you go, folks. That is part two of the equipment construction. We're going to move into part three, which is more the meat and potatoes. That's what you guys really want, right? The installation aspects of it. How does the code apply? All right. So we're going to get into that in the next podcast. So again, thanks for everybody listening. Hopefully you got something out of that. Until next time, stay safe and God bless.